And now this lecture, I believe I titled it Modern Technology and the Mark of the Beast. Is everybody here familiar with the Revelation 13 account of the two beasts? There's the basically what's traditionally called the Antichrist, a demon-possessed ruler in the end times, and his right-hand man, the false prophet. We won't have time to go in depth into that, so I just want to encourage you to read Revelation chapter 13 and 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, where the lawless one, the man of sin, the Antichrist, goes into the temple and proclaims himself to be God, and then is defeated by Christ at his return. But let me just read the last three verses of Revelation chapter 13. After talking about the Antichrist and the false prophet, it says this: "And he," this is the false prophet, "he forces everybody to worship an image of the Antichrist and to accept the mark of the Antichrist. "And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. And so you have this mark of the beast that you have to receive on your right hand or on your forehead in the last days, and you can't buy or sell unless you have that mark. What we're going to look at is not just modern technology, but also some trends that are going on that I believe should raise a few eyebrows and make us question whether or not these things are beginning to be fulfilled in our midst. We now have the technology to do the Mark of the Beast thing, and we'll be looking at some of the things that are that deal with that. First, let me say this. A lot of people would say, well, you know, you can't have, the end times can't, we don't have this one world government, okay? You can even call in the Rush Limbaugh radio show and say that you think that there's a push towards a one world government headed by the United Nations, and Rush Limbaugh will laugh and call you a conspiracy nut, okay? But what amazes me is that if you say that it looks to you like a one-world government is being formed and you're against it, then the media says you're a conspiracy nut. If you say that you think that there's a one-world government being formed and you're for it, then the media talks about you as if you're an intellectual. So I don't think the issue really, when everything is said and done, I don't think the issue is this thing coming down? It's coming down. The issue is, are you for it or are you against it? Now, those who are really opposed to the United States surrendering its sovereignty, basically, people like Rush Limbaugh and many Republican leaders on the national level, it's kind of like if you get enough people in powerful places laughing every time you say something, eventually the people will stop saying it. And that's what we see today is those who are opposed to world government choose no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, because every time they do, people make fun of them as if they're a Neanderthal and they don't know what's going on. But those who are all for it talk about it. You know, I mean, all you got, just take out a pad and watch CNN and take notes. And you tell me, I mean, we're talking about a World Bank, a global economy, international laws, a one world religion, turning over all the military power of different countries, including America, over to the United Nations. I mean, so if you have a global military, international law, a global economy, a one-world religion, if you've got it all rolled up into one, if that's not a one-world government, I don't know what is. And there's so much doublespeak that is going on right now. A lady, her last name is Slaughter, which is a really good name for a globalist, and in the she wrote in the Foreign Affairs, which is the journal of the Council of Foreign Relations, the CFR, and believe me, you cannot, on the national level, you cannot win big elections without the okay, the thumbs up from the Council on Foreign Relations. But she stated, this lady Slaughter, in their journal stated that we're not talking about world government. Instead, we're talking about global governance. Those phrases are synonymous. That's doublespeak. She's saying we're not talking about world government. Why? Because nobody likes the phrase world government. We're talking about global governance, which is the same thing, but it's, you know, people don't go walking around. Do you think there's global governance going on right now? I mean, people don't use the phrase, so we'll just call it that. Mikhail Gorbachev, people think he's doesn't have any power anymore, but he has these state of the world forums where they try to solve all the problems. They're sponsored by the Gorbachev Foundation, and right here in the United States, usually in San Francisco, and they try to solve all the world's problems. And he stated at his one in September and October of 1995 that we should not talk about world government. We should not use that phrase. But the whole theme was how do we move towards a world government, but just let's not call it world government. So, but whatever the case, we're moving in that direction. Here's the New Republic magazine, which is a very liberal magazine, is a copy of the cover, and the lead article written by Robert Wright is titled "America is Surrendering Its Sovereignty to a World Government, Hooray." So he's saying that, you know, we're giving up our own, you know, control, our own sovereignty to a world government, but I think it's a great idea, is what he's saying. And one of his articles in this magazine is titled "Continental Drift," and it's subtitled "World Government is Coming, Deal with It." And so what he's basically saying, he's saying, look, let's stop calling these guys conspiracy nuts. They're right. We are building a world government. Let's be honest about it. Now, if they don't like it, tell them, you know, you better get used to it, because this is coming down whether you like it or not. But at least you got to have a politically liberal person who's willing to admit it. January 17th, the year 2000, this was 2 years ago, in a leading liberal magazine in this country. This here is from Computer Source Magazine, June 1997. Computer Source Magazine. These guys are not like Bible prophecy guys. They're not Christians. All they do is write about computers, and they try to keep up with the latest technology. So this guy is not trying to make the Book of Revelation look good, okay? And, you know, as far as I know, the guy's an atheist. I don't know where he comes from. But it's Computer Source Magazine, June 1997. The reason why I'm showing these things is because what is being reported by the non-Christian world and often the anti-Christian world is confirming what the Book of Revelation predicts. Okay? But he titled, this guy's name is William Van Winkle. He titled this argument, "Strange Horizons Under Your Skin." And he starts off with this fictional situation, and then he goes into his article about modern technology. says a man sits in a holding cell, deciding. He is the last human without an implant, that network chip wired into the brain's base. He cannot exist in virtual space, nor conduct any financial transactions. He has no history, except in his primitive natural mind, and no social identity. In short, he cannot function with the rest of his species, and he must either adapt, accepting the government's implant offer, or die. He feels himself torn and cannot choose when he hears the approaching footsteps. Okay? So that's the situation he sets up. And then this guy starts talking. So it sounds to me like, whoa, he's going to be talking about Big Brother and you got to watch out for the stuff. No. This guy's arguing for the implant. He's arguing that this guy over here is a jackass. He should have taken it long before they arrested him. And but listen to what he says. He says, the proposition of bringing computers into the human body is no longer fantasy, but fact. People I've surveyed seem unanimously averse to accepting a computer into their bodies, but acceptance is a slow, reluctant process. It begins with medical benefits such as those listed above. Next month, we'll explore a different option. Would you be willing to implant all your ID and your money under your skin? Developments are afoot that may not only intrigue, but persuade you. So this guy thinks it's a good idea, okay? And then in the July edition, he talks about smart money and goes further in the August edition, continuing with this stuff. So here, experts on where computer technology is going and say, hey, it's there. We can move to this cashless society. By the way, this is not something that is happening somewhere else. An awful lot. I think it's a good idea. My wife was like, we had a puppy dog. The dog's not alive now, but we had a puppy dog, and I thought it would be a good idea to get the implant, you know, the microchip implant, because then you could identify it. If the dog's lost, they'll be able to identify the dog and stuff like that. And because of what the Bible says, my wife was like totally opposed to doing it even to a dog. And I said, honey, you know, hey, it's bad when you do that with human beings, because we are human beings. But a dog, you know, a dog is like cattle. You can brand cattle and that type of thing. And the thing is, if we move to a cashless society and we get a microchip under the skin and stuff, just think, nobody can steal your money. You know, I mean, if you go, first you go to a smart card, people can still steal your card. But if you, and there's ways to get around that. You can do fingerprint ID and stuff, but it's just facial ID and facial recognition mechanisms and stuff. But it just you're just complicating things. You put the microchip under the skin, it's no problem. I mean, we walk into grocery lines, and I got a box of Cheerios. I have no idea what it costs. Okay, all it's got is a universal product code on there. And they take it, and they either scan it over like that, or they have the gun that scans it, and then it rings up $3.99, and I figure out how much I'm going to be spending. Okay, but it's only a short jump to go from that, to take the gun and scan somebody's forehead to deduct it out of the guy's electronic account. Now, we're even doing commercials now. They got commercials where they didn't have the gun in the store. They've got the thing down there, and everybody walks up with their mark, and the cashier lady grabs the guy's head, and she's going like this over the thing, and she says, yeah, sometimes it's takes a little bit of time. She's trying to get a reading off the guy, but the technology is there. We're already doing this kind of stuff to dogs and cats. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but what I'm saying is the technology is there. Now all we have to do is to see if people are willing to take this. But, you know, you could say, okay, well, selling drugs is illegal. Okay, now we got to enforce it. Well, it's a lot easier to enforce if the only electronic transactions, we go to a cashless society, and the only electronic transactions that can be made are legal ones. So it makes it a lot easier to enforce laws, to prevent crimes, that sort. So, but of course, from a biblical standpoint, it dehumanizes humans. It treats us as less than human. But worse than that, it's going to be used as, well, if you want to accept this mark, you have to worship the Antichrist as God. And in order to do that, you're going to have to deny Christ as your God and Savior. So that's Computer Source Magazine. Time Magazine. This is April 27th, 1998. Time Magazine, the future of money, okay? Are banks really necessary? The future of money. And let me see if I can... Okay, they start out on pages 50 and 51. Here they're arguing for the electronic card and all, and they just argue across, and I'll see. It says a single electronic card like this may replace everything in your wallet, including your cash. So it says in the future, a cashless society? Never. The stuff is just too handy. But then they say, but the convenience of digital money is compelling. You know, we could just move to a cashless society. This electronic card could also include your credit card information. It says in the future, credit insurers abound, but no need to carry all that plastic because it's on that one card. It can contain your ATM card, your ID cards. And they state there in the future about the future. Non-conspiracists could consolidate pertinent info in one place. Yeah, weird. And it's like, you know, I read the whole article. It doesn't have to do with anything. So it's kind of like, as long as you're not a conspiracy nut like Fernandez, who thinks that someday there's going to be a one-world government run by the Antichrist, as long as you're not one of those, you can be part of our society and have this single electronic card. But they're saying, you know, if people think, you know, one world government is a bad thing, you know, there's no place for those people in our future brave new world. They talk about your insurance can be on that card, and then it says and your life, and it says in the future one card or one chip with your life on it. And then they mention in the article, says your daughter can store the money any way she wants, on her laptop, on a debit card, even in the not too distant future, on a chip implanted under her skin. Okay? This is Time Magazine. This isn't Lindsay's Prophecy Review. Okay? And the thing is, when Hal Lindsay says this, or the Peter and Paul Lalonde, the Lalonde brothers, who whole lives to investigating the mark of the beast and modern technology, when they talk about this, they're kooks. When Time Magazine or Computer Source Magazine talk about it, they're just, oh yeah, those guys are really sharp. They're on the cutting edge of technology. So, you know, in the end, the good guys and the bad guys are not determined by talking about a cashless society, an implant, microchip implant under the skin. In the end, it's good guy or bad guy is determined by whether or not you're for it or against it. And if you're against it, you know, you're getting in the way. You're holding back world peace. You're one of those haters of humanity.
Well, how, as you're saying all this, and you know, it's a real technocratic society, how do you know if you're receiving the mark of the beast or if you're just, you know, as a Christian, I'm sure, you know, we're going to know, but...
Yeah, I would say two things. One is Satan doesn't want to, you know, just stamp people. That doesn't do anything for him. So he wants us to deny Christ. So I think as part of accepting the mark, and we see that the new religion right now of Western culture, Europe and America, the new religion, the most fastest growing religion, it's got postmodern elements, it's got new age elements, but in the end, when everything's said and done, it's the religion of tolerance, the new tolerance. Now, tolerance used to be freedom of religion and freedom of speech. that you were free to be a Muslim and believe that only Muslims go to heaven, and I'm free to be a Christian and believe only Christians go to heaven, and we can dialogue and disagree, but I will defend your right to hold your religion, you defend my right to hold my religion. That's freedom of religion. That was what tolerance was traditionally. Now tolerance has become, to be a tolerant person, you have to believe all beliefs are equally true and all behavior is equally good. And if you don't believe that, you're branded as being intolerant, and you're one of those narrow-minded people who the likes of you causes all the wars and the terrorism and is holding back world peace, so therefore you need to be removed so we can usher in this new age of peace. I believe that what has to happen is, okay, the mark of the beast, but it also has to coincide with Christians as being viewed as the enemies of mankind. Now, this will not be the first time this has happened, okay? Christians were viewed as treasonous and as the enemies of mankind by the ancient Roman Empire, okay? Because they refused to acknowledge the deity of the Roman Emperor. That was viewed as being a revolutionary who wants to conquer the empire that through force has brought peace to the ancient world. So you are an enemy of peace by refusing to bow before the Roman Emperor, and you are an enemy of peace because you acknowledged an authority higher than the Roman Empire. You didn't worship the Roman Empire and say, hey, this is as big as it gets, okay? And now, based upon that, the Roman Empire seeing these Christians as a threat to them, it forced Christians to worship in hiding. So then the Roman Empire said, look at that. They're a bunch of conspiracy nuts. They're conspiring. They meet in secret places, and they're conspiring to take over our government. Okay? And then they said, and also in these secret places, they're eating flesh and drinking blood. They're cannibals. And then they're practicing all sorts of immorality, making up stories that the government officials knew were not true. But it's kind of like the charges we got on them aren't going to fly with the people. They're a threat to us, so we want them dead. But we got to make them also look like they're a threat to the people. I mean, did the Roman Empire really care about immorality? You know, number one, the Christians weren't sexually immoral. But number two, I mean, look at all these ancient pagan gods they were worshiping. Half of them had, you know, temple prostitutes, either male or female. The Roman Empire didn't care about sexual promiscuity, yet that was one of the things they trumped up on the church. So, but today, you know, we're seeing the same things happening today, where we could have world peace if these Christians who caused all the wars in modern times, if they would just move out of the way, and if they weren't so intolerant, if they would just acknowledge that all religions lead to God. And, oh, by the way, do you know that that preachers are always involved in sex or money scandals, and priests are always molesting little boys? You know, and the funny thing is, whenever they show a priest on television and they try to imply that because this one priest molested little boys, all priests molest little boys, what does the average Protestant do? Usually applauds that. Ah, yeah, get them Catholics. And then when a Protestant preacher is getting slammed for being involved in a sex or finance scandal, what do the Roman Catholics do? They applaud, say, yeah, get those Protestants. And we don't even realize, while we're slamming them and they're slamming us, at least on the moral issues where we agree, we're losing those battles because we're allowing the divide and conquer strategy. And we don't even see what's coming down. But whatever the case, the Antichrist is going to want us. I think in order to accept the mark, you're going to have to deny Christ. And I think it's going to be done under the banner of that to accept Christ, to be a Christian, is to be an enemy of the world. Okay? The Lalonde brothers in their movie, what was it, Revelation? The Christians were called the haters. That's how they were referred to. And right now, I mean, we have people who call themselves conservatives. I'm talking, an Irish Catholic like Hannity from Hannity and Combs on the Fox Network. I'm talking about another Irish Catholic, Bill O'Reilly. Both guys told Jerry Falwell when they had him on their program, "Don't, because you believe that only people only saved through Jesus, don't you think that your religion is very similar to Osama bin Laden?" And it's like, what in the world are you guys talking about? And so it's kind of like we have people who, even some of these people, profess faith in Christ, but they don't understand that they're accepting the redefinition of tolerance. That all of a sudden, freedom of religion means you have to believe that everybody's religion leads to God.
O'Reilly is basing it on, not on biblical principles, but on a professor that he admired who was a Catholic.
Yeah. Yeah, the two things there is that would, number one, the Pope's got too big of a house to keep clean, and a lot of the Catholic professors that students admire would be excommunicated if the Pope knew enough about them and had the time to get rid of them. And now the other side of the coin is the Pope doesn't share the sentiments of O'Reilly, but he's actually somewhere in between, because he really likes Vatican II, and there is what is called an inclusivistic element there. The Pope would argue, and his Threshold of Hope argues, that Muslims and Jews are not saved, because to be a Muslim and a Jew, you have to reject Christ. But there may be some Hindus and Buddhists who haven't heard the gospel yet, and who are saved by Christ, and they just don't know it. And they might even reject Christ, because Christ isn't popular in their culture. Christianity isn't considered a viable option. And Vatican II opens all these kinds of doors. This is the same church that supposedly infallibly said there's no salvation outside the church. Now they're widening the definition of what the church is. But, you know, that kind of leads to my next point, but the Catholic Church in crisis. But just getting back to what you're saying, I think it's gonna just like the ancient Christians, they weren't put to death for worshiping Jesus. They were put to death for worshiping Jesus alone. They refused to say Caesar is Lord and to offer incense or a sacrifice to the Roman gods. And so because we will refuse to bow down to the Antichrist, we won't even be allowed to have the mark anyway. But having said that, if somebody was talking about either marking us permanently on the right hand or on the forehead, or putting a microchip implant, it had nothing to do with religion, I would still rather starve to death. You know, better safe than sorry type of thing. At the same time, I think it's going to be blatantly clear.
Reject
Christ at the same. Now, let me say this too: Tim LaHaye and Jenkins, God bless them. Lindsay, God bless them. Write Dynamite stuff and stuff like that. But about the End Times and all, the Left Behind series, how Lindsay wrote together, they put their stuff together and they've sold almost probably over 100 million copies. We put LaHaye's work and how Lindsay's work and led a lot of people to Christ. The one basic thing I disagree with them on, they believe Jesus will secretly snatch away Christians before the tribulation period starts. I myself disagree with that. I think that the biblical view is the earliest view of the ancient church, the pupils of the apostles, that the church will go through the tribulation period. So in my way of thinking, if you trust in Jesus for salvation, that doesn't automatically give you an exemption from the tribulation. By the way, I don't even know for sure. With everything I'm saying, you might think, well, this guy thinks that the end times are going to happen any minute. No, we don't know the day or the hour. I believe Jesus made the end prophecies throughout the Bible, Matthew 24, so vague that each and every generation since Christ would think, hey, Jesus could return in my lifetime. But then I also believe he made him so specific that last generation will definitely know, because he tells you exactly when to head for the hills, when you see the abominations of desolation standing in the holy place. Basically, when the Antichrist is in the temple proclaiming to be God and the image of the Antichrist is set up in the temple, then it's time to flee. Problem is, you're halfway through the tribulation period and they're immediately going to institute the mark of the beast. But, you know, got a list of signs to look for. I don't know if you want to jot these down, but number one, establishment of a one-world government. Okay, we already have an international criminal court, and all America has to do is to start engaging in wars that the United Nations disagrees with, and we might start finding ourselves being tried there. And the Constitution is irrelevant. All you have are three international judges. But whatever, the establishment of a one-world government, a rebuilt temple with the Old Testament sacrifices reinstituted. That would be a very key sign. I don't store food and buy survivalist gear, but if they started rebuilding the temple tomorrow, I might just start a new hobby. A seven-year peace treaty involving many nations and probably involving the Middle East. I wouldn't be surprised if some guy with charisma comes on the scene with all the answers to our problems that figures out how to sign a treaty between the Israelis and the Arab nations, and this guy has access to military power and says, I'll enforce that peace. And I wouldn't even be surprised if in the peace agreement, if the Jews give up more land to the Arabs for a Palestinian nation, the establishment of a Palestinian nation, in return for permission for the Jews to rebuild the temple alongside the Dome of the Rock. And but if a guy was able to pull that off, then he would be what the scriptures refer to as the Antichrist. Also, the rise of a one-world false religion. We're already seeing this. Robert Mueller was a former Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations. He has been named the father of global education. Okay? Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations. Now, he's retired from that. He's a real old guy now. And but he has curriculum. By the way, Polls 2000, America 2000, all that stuff came from this guy. It's got all different names, so that it's real hard to see that. It sounds like just Washington State's doing its own thing, New Jersey's doing its own thing. Then you find out it's all the same federal government program under different names. So then you start thinking, boy, that's not constitutional. Federal government is forcing its way out. And then you fall under UNESCO and the United Nations. And that the Goals 2000, America 2000 thing over here, UNESCO is doing that in all these other countries too. So it's not just it's coming down from the federal government, it's coming down from the United Nations. But the guy who writes the curriculum and all, okay, and gets the ball rolling is Robert Mueller, who considers himself a Roman Catholic, but he is New Age to the core, okay? And but he, along with Bishop William Swing, has signed the drawn up and signed the URI, the United Religions Initiative. And it's their goal, I believe, by the year, I think it's by 2005, where they want the United Religions Organization, which will be two religions, what the United Nations is to nations. Okay? So basically, they always say, oh, no, we're not talking about a one-world religion. But in the end, they start talking about a one-world religion, where they just want to take what's common religions and group it together. Well, what that means is they want to reject what is distinct to Christianity. See, Robert Mueller, former assistant. This will come. We got a book that when the funds are there, we'll go to the press with it. God, Government, and the Road to Tyranny, and this is a chapter from a chapter in there on the coming one world religion. But Robert Mueller, former Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations, is the author of the World Core Curriculum, a document that has earned him the title the Father of Global Education. The World Core Curriculum promotes globalism and New Age beliefs, and it is an attempt to set forth the principles for education programs of all nations. The curriculum, which attempts to convert students into global citizens, received a warm welcome at the United Nations and is now being implemented in many nations. Okay, Mueller's The World Core Curriculum is making inroads into America public, American public education and was the driving force behind the Goals 2000 campaign in American schools. Mueller acknowledges that his thoughts has been greatly inspired by Theosophy's Alice Bailey and New Ager Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. Two big New Agers, and the Theosophical Society just rotten to the core. It's Luciferian in the end. The worship of Lucifer is the final stage of the Theosophical movement. At the 1993 Parliament of World Religions, since it was in Chicago, Mueller was the keynote speaker. During his speech, this is 1993, he called for the creation of an organization dedicated to promoting religious unity in the world. Mueller envisioned the United Religions as a sister organization to the United Nations. Through the United Religions Initiative, this is becoming a reality. And by the way, some of the religions that are involved in this are not just the traditional religions. I mean, they've got not only traditional religions, but the Wiccan movement, the modern witchcraft movement. They've got all kinds of crazy occultic religions. Sure. Oh, it's... Sure. Okay, but let me... The guy now is Bishop Swing. The ball's been turned over to... Robert Mueller, Chancellor of the UN Peace University. Julius Hollister, founder of the Theosophical Temple of Understanding. And by the way, you will find the Theosophical cult, founded by Helena Blavatsky in 1875, in United Nations circles. I mean, the meditation room in the United Nations building was dedicated by Theosophists who founded their own religious organizations. And the chaplain there is a former Theosophist. So, I mean, everywhere you look in the United Nations circles, if they have Maurice Strong, one of the big guns with the United Nations, a Canadian billionaire, he's a Theosophist. And in the end, Theosophy was what brought the New Age movement to America. And in the end, they're Luciferian. They say that Christianity gave Lucifer a bad rap when he said that man will become God. It wasn't a lie. It's the truth that sets man free. Okay? But whatever the case, Robert Mueller, Juliet Hollister, and Episcopal Bishop William Swing drafted the United Religions Initiative in 1996. Bishop Swing has become the initiative's leading spokesperson. Through this initiative, Swing hopes to unite the religions of the world into one body, the United Religions Organization. Swing's goals are to have the initiative signed by 60 million people and for the United Religions Organization to be up and running by the year 2005. Okay? So, you know, and Mikhail Gorbachev, not only is he talking a globalist message, a one world government, but he's also talking a New Age message. And, there's a little debate going on about whether or not he's a real New Ager and he really worships the earth, or if he just understands what a lot of dictators understood, and that if you can get people to worship the earth, they're the easiest to enslave. Okay? People in pagan religions, it's real easy to give them the bread and circuses and enslave them. But Gorbachev and his wife did celebrate. In the old Soviet Union, they did initiate the celebration of 100 years of the Theosophy coming to coming to Russia, actually. So I tend to think that maybe he's not a true New Ager, but maybe his wife is. And out of respect for her, he goes that route. But now he's also realizing, you know, the emperor doesn't have to believe in the myths, but if he can get the people to believe in the pagan myths, then they're easier to enslave. Final note here, well, two final notes. One is Barbara Marx Hubbard. She's a leading New Age author. Mikhail Gorbachev invites her to speak at his State of the World forums. She speaks, shares the podium with former secretaries of state, Baker and Schultz. Gorbachev, a lot of people don't realize it. They think, poor Gorbachev, he's a has-been. He's the highest paid speaker on the planet Earth. He gets $100,000 for every 30 minutes of talking. Okay? Institute of Biblical Defense can't even afford to have him come in and sneeze on a microphone. It would be too expensive for us. $100,000 for every half hour of speaking. By the way, I think that at this point, if I had to, it was held at gunpoint and said, who's the leading candidate for the Antichrist? I would say right now it's Mikhail Gorbachev. At the same time, I don't know when this stuff's going to come down, but I'd be very surprised if it doesn't come down in my lifetime. If I were Satan and I was going to possess an end-time world leader and try to rule the world through him, as much quote-unquote charisma as Gorbachev is supposed to have, I'd get somebody with a lot more charisma than that. So the thing on his head is intriguing, but I don't know. There's just something about it, you know, Mikhail Gorbachev sitting in the temple and proclaiming to be God. I just don't think it would be too convincing. The last point I'll close with is the Catholic Church in crisis. Malachi Martin was a former Vatican insider, Catholic priest, and personal friend of several popes, including the current pope, Pope John Paul II, and he wrote a novel called Windswept House, a Vatican novel about satanic cardinals attempting to take over the Vatican and then join arms, push towards a new world order. And by the way, this current push towards a new world order, in 1957, the Catholic Pope spoke to them and knew that they wanted to reunify Europe, and then they wanted to unify the world. And he basically told them, that will never happen unless you win the hearts of men, and the only way to do that is to have a one-world religion. And then he suggested that Roman Catholicism be the one-world religion. Well, two things came out of that. Number one, immediately they rejected Roman Catholicism as the religion they wanted. But number two, these wannabe world leaders left the room acknowledging that he was right, that the only way to effectively have a one-world government that is controllable is to have a one-world religion as well. Malachi Martin, in this novel, is saying that there's some Vatican insiders, very powerful cardinals, that are embracing New Age and even theosophical-type thought, and they like the New World Order, and they want a piece of the pie, they want some of that power, and they think the Pope is wrong. In fact, he even argues that these guys knew that would never accept a satanic Pope, so they tried to get a Pope who was a pushover. So they got Pope John Paul I. And what did that guy say? You know, the day he becomes Pope, he's talking about he wants to start selling all the gold and silver that Roman Catholicism has, and then turning around and feeding the hungry with that money. And all of a sudden, these guys are thinking, we wanted a pushover. What is he talking about? He's going to give our power away. And, the guy died 30 days later. He received a glass of water in the middle of the night and didn't wake up in the morning. And Malachi Martin, it's his contention that he was assassinated. And there are several books written on the subject. And it was because, according to Malachi Martin, it was because he found out about the satanic ritual that was performed by powerful cardinals in an attempt to bring a satanic order into Roman Catholicism. So, but anyway, whatever the case, Pope John Paul II shares the same views. Oh, by the way, he's questioning this article as to whether or not his novel his if there's historical fact to it, he just changed the names. And he basically admits that in this article. And the article is from the New American Magazine, June 9th, 1997. But basically, he and the Pope say that the next Pope, and Malachi Martin died recently, but they're not sure if the next Pope is going, if this Pope is going to be removed. Due to the cardinals saying, well, you just don't see, when they got this guy, Pope John Paul II, they thought he was pro-communist, so they thought, well, he's pro-communist, we'll have our way with him, he's practically one of us, because he went in Poland and never said a bad word about the communists and all. Problem is, when the Pope John Paul II, when all the cardinals are lining up and they kneel down before him and they kiss his ring, his supervisor from Poland, who now was a cardinal, at the time was a bishop, and he worked for him, he was a real anti-communist. But he would get arrested like twice a year and spend 3 months in jail at a time. So he told young Pope John Paul I, when he was just a priest, he told him, look, somebody's got to shepherd the flock. So while I'm in prison, continue my anti-communist work, but don't be real vocal and public about it, because one of us has to be free to shepherd the flock. So they play good guy, bad guy type roles. But the Pope, turns out Pope John Paul II is totally opposed to communism. He even self-published several books to lead the underground in how to fight communism and stuff. But they didn't know that until this cardinal that used to be his supervisor knelt down before him to kiss his ring, and the Pope, who was a lot younger back then, grabbed the old guy under the armpits and lifted him up. And then all of a sudden, according to Malachi Martin, all these Vatican higher-ups are looking and thinking, oh, no, this is worse than Pope John Paul I. This guy's not some communist pushover. Because he basically was saying, I respect you too much to have you kneel down and kiss my ring. As far as I'm concerned, you're still my mentor. And he starts lifting up the most anti-communist cardinal in the whole College of Cardinals. And all of a sudden it dawns on these guys, Pope John Paul II isn't going to play ball with us. Now Malachi Martin's problem with John Paul II is that he says, you as the Pope have the authority to kick these guys out and to tell the American church to start getting back in line or they're gone. And Pope John Paul II, it's like one is saying, you stand up for what we Catholics are supposed to stand up, kick these guys out. Pope John Paul II is saying, no, unity is too important. I need to try to persuade them and keep the church united. And so they both want the same goal, but they're going through different strategies. But whatever the case, they both refer to the next pope, whoever the College of Cardinals elects, the College of Cardinals, whoever they elect, they refer to the next pope as anti-pope, which is about as close to Antichrist as we come now. To me, it seems like and by the way, the guy who's interviewing him is an Irish Catholic, a serious Irish Catholic, and it's really something too, because it sounds like the Protestant Reformation. He says the Pope is surrounded by men in clerical garb who do not possess the Catholic faith. They are working with foundations, non-governmental organizations, international groups, financial institutions, governments, academia, and other agencies to bring a new world order into existence. But he ends up going on to say, he says, it doesn't mean the end of the church. It means the end of the church's structure as we know it. Sounds a lot like what Martin Luther was saying. I'm not opposed to the church, but I think the organized church, the structure, is going in the wrong direction. I want the church to get back to the Bible. There are some traditional Catholics who might not stand for this type of thing. But basically, I think an anti-pope would be closer to a false prophet type figure than the Antichrist himself. And a UN Secretary General could quite possibly be a Antichrist type figure. There's also Gorbachev wants a council of enlightened guys, intellectuals, to talk over the world's problems. You got the Club of Rome divided the world into 10 different regions back in 1958. So it could be the 10 toes of Book of Daniel, the 10 horns of Daniel and Revelation, 10 kings of 10 kingdoms, but then there could be a council of seven that oversee them, and one of those seven becomes the Antichrist, receives the mortal head wound and survives. But whatever the case, the reason why the globalists are not interested in Protestant churches as much as they are in the Roman Catholic Church, Roman Catholic Church has a worldwide structure that they would like to use, to utilize, if able to bring a one world religion into the picture. So the way it stands right now, Roman Catholic Church is, you know, if you're teaching the doctrine of the Trinity and that Jesus is God the Son and the Savior of mankind, despite the differences that Protestants and Catholics have, and I left Roman Catholicism, so I consider some of those differences pretty important. But you're not going to be compatible with the New World Order with those beliefs intact. So either Roman Catholicism is going to be part of it, or if it's going to be part of it, there's got to be some drastic changes. And Malachi Martin and the Pope think that the next Pope is the guy who's going to do that. So, okay. Anybody have any questions? Now keep in mind, the story ends. It has a happy ending. Jesus comes back and rescues his people and defeats those who are opposed to him, and then reigns on the earth and ushers in the signs to look for. I said the establishment of one world government, the rebuilt temple with Old Testament sacrifices reinstituted, 7-year peace treaty involving many nations. Number 4, the rise of a one world false religion. We talked about that. Number 5, the rise of a charismatic world leader, you know, a guy with a lot of charisma. And number 6, increase in persecution of Christians. Presently, 160,000 Christians are martyred for their faith around the globe, mostly in Islamic countries and communist countries. But when we see that more and more on a worldwide scale, that would be another indication that the end is near. So, Matthew 24, a good close reading of that will give you a lot of indication. But keep in mind, the Lord Jesus returns and rescues his people and brings the kingdom of God to earth. The Bible does have a happy ending. I don't want to sound pessimistic here at all. So hopefully this kind of study will not cause you to be paranoid, but will just cause you to cling closer to the Lord Jesus.
Well, even there,
you talk about like pre-tribbers, but even pre-tribbers that I've talked to, openly acknowledge that things are going to get bad before that point, and they like Hal Lindsey, Tim LaHaye, are the first to admit that if their views are correct, Christians like themselves are going to be getting persecuted even before the rapture. And so, nobody in the premillennial camp, nobody who literally believes in the second coming of Christ where he reigns on the earth for 1,000 years, nobody in that camp is saying it's going to get easy for, you know, believers and stuff like that. But as far as I'm concerned, if I'm wrong and Christians are snatched away before the tribulation, I'm going to be screaming hallelujah at the top of my lungs, and because my doctor did advise me that to try to avoid pain as much as possible. So I'm not some guy who wants to looking forward to the tribulation period and that type of thing. I'd like to avoid tribulation as much as possible, but.